It might be on the side, I don't know which one it is.
I know, I just don't wanna.
I'm gonna sit right here in the front, Larry.
Well, thanks to all people who are the diehards. So our last panel, or our last session here, is a panel discussion, how to manage through a catastrophic event. And having been through a major fire ourselves, our company, back in 2019, nothing really prepares you for this kind of stuff. So it's very important that you make as good a decisions as you can on the spot when you're, if and when you're ever thrown into it. So we assembled three people here that have had catastrophic events, and they're going to share with you what they went through, and hopefully. They will give you some wisdom here on how they handled things, and you know, if you're ever in that situation, I think it'll help. So we are going to start with Mr. Steve Liffers, and he's currently with Denali, but when you had the event, it was a different company. Yeah, so come on up here.
Okay. Yeah, Larry figured that by putting catastrophe and disasters at the end of the meeting would at least keep a few people around. As Larry said, it is a eye-opening event. Anybody that is in the soil and mulch industry has had a fire, and if you haven't, you're lying. So it's how bad it is, and it's how you manage it. So our adventure began early Easter morning 2020. We had a fire break out on the left-hand side of the property. So that's an aerial view of Swanson. We are completely surrounded by a river, which came into play in a big way. But the fire broke out on the far left-hand side where we loaded cedar into rail cars. We had built a ramp, and we're going up and down that ramp with front-end loaders. The compaction obviously caused heating, and there was a lot of wind, and all of a sudden we had a stovepipe. Within 2 hours, with 40-mile-an-hour winds, we had over 140 separate fires, and it was, full-blown. We were bringing in fire departments from Portland, not Seattle, but Tacoma came in, and complete nightmare. Oh, it's back up. Okay. Yeah. I made notes, so... So we had about 120 employees. Over 100 showed up to fight the fire. Obviously, in a fire, you're using your front-end loaders to break up the piles, push things to the side. It got so bad that after 8 hours, the fire departments collectively came to us and said nothing could be done. They were leaving the site. We had lost one building, one production line, a lot of grinders, conveyors, screeners. So we ended up calling up a Chinook water dropper, a gigantic helicopter, and at the cost of $60,000 for 12 hours, they were taking a 600-700 gallon basket, dipping it into the river, and constantly dropping it on the fires. How do I advance? And we can show them. Perfect. So if you've ever experienced the fire, especially at night, anything at this size, this is hell. I mean, it was Dante's Inferno. I'd never seen anything like it. It went for 72 hours. We couldn't get a hold of it, and the wind kept blowing, it kept stirring things up. And we thought that ultimately the fire was going to be the worst part of the entire event, until we started the second phase, which was dealing with insurance, which we'll get to. So this is some of the burns equipment. Different areas of fire. Then this is some of the buildings that burned. One of the areas that we stored plastic in was on the side of our one of the production buildings. When rolls of film catch fire, they burn with an intensity that will melt an I-beam. So, I mean, the damage level was astounding. You can see the helicopters, and I think we may have a... Nope. So, you know, the helicopter was a lifesaver, but incredibly expensive. So 72 hours later, the fire's out. So you find out real quickly who your friends are. We had a, we had people that called us up and offered anything they could do. They offered us contract manufacturing. One guy offered us money right off the bat, saying, whoa. We don't need that just yet. Advice, friendship. We had other competitors turn around and call our customers and say, they burned down, and we'll take the business over. So you find out real quickly who your friends are. After the insurance came in, we basically had an $11 million loss, and insurance offered us $6 million. So we found we had made a very bad mistake, something called co-insurance. And essentially what that is when you are, when you're dealing with your insurance people, and you're trying to get your prices in line, especially over the last few years, they bring up something called coinsurance, which is where you give your stated values, and you decide what you want to value stuff at, using depreciation and blue book models and whatnot. The effect was that we had significantly undervalued the cost of replacing stuff. The second component of it was business interruption, which is highly negotiated. So they came back at $6 million, and one of the people that had reached out to us early on indicated that they had used a company called Adjusters International. And basically what that company does is they will go to war with your insurance company. And not to bore you with the details, but we ended up with about a $10 million settlement. Adjusters takes a fairly good cut, but at the end of the day, well worth it. So what did we learn from this? We now probe piles on a regular basis. Any hot spots are broken up immediately. We developed a fire plan, because what we ended up having was that 100 employees showed up and were willing to do anything. Problem was, we didn't have muster stations, we didn't have a plan in place for what people were supposed to do. So, at certain points of the fire, we had employees on front end loaders fighting little individual fires, and we didn't even know where they were. Thank God we didn't lose anybody and had no injuries, but it could have been a lot worse. So you know, I guess at the end we'll do some questions, but never figure it's not going to happen. Just be cognizant of the fact you want to put a plan into place. You want to probe your piles. You don't want to delay anything that's hot. You want to break it up immediately and just prepare. And be careful what insurance you get. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Steve. I think in one of those pictures, Steve, you had a dozer that went up in flames too, right?
Yeah, we lost a lot of, as I said, we lost grinders. We had a lot of stationary equipment. We lost grinders, a lot of conveyors, screening equipment, and we did lose a few pieces of rolling stock, an older loader and bulldozer.
But that dozer was fighting the fire, and that's when it lit up, right? So we had a similar situation. We, after most of the fire was beat back and so on, we had wheel loader spreading things out and so on. And those machines, you get a little bit of oil in the bottom of them or some debris and whatever, and they can catch on fire. So we lost another one after most of the fire was out. So it's something to be very cautious of. I don't know if you can't or don't use your equipment, but you got to be very wary. Maybe there needs to be a spotter there by the machinery, so if something lights up, you can get it put out. But it's it happened to us and Swanson. So our next catastrophic event is with Ohio Mulch. This is Jim Weber.
Hello, my name is Jim Weber. How do you start the video on this? So this was June 1st, 2011, I got a call 5 o'clock in the morning from our plant manager saying that the entire plant's on fire. And, you know, being half asleep, it's like, what are you talking about? Can't you guys put it out? You know, I was in a daze. I had no idea what he was talking about. He's like, everything is on fire. And there's a video here. So So 6 o'clock in the morning, I was at the airport, headed to Homerville, Georgia, out in the middle of nowhere. It's a volunteer fire department. In the end, there's 50 firefighters on site. American Red Cross was there to feed the firefighters. When we're coming into Homerville, flying in, we could see the smoke 100 miles away. And certainly was definitely devastating. I had no idea what to do. Called my insurance company, called my attorney. We had cameras on site, videotaped the majority of the fire. Didn't videotape exactly what caused it, but through cause and origin, through the insurance company and through the fire department, they determined it was either my lot truck or my knuckle boom loader. Both of those pieces of equipment had a little silver fan on the dashboard that the employees would turn on and keep cool. Both of those were left on, so they don't know which one caused it. But at first we were concerned that, was this arson? Did an ex-employee come in here and start this fire? And thank God we had the cameras to rule that out. That was not the case. We lost the sawmill, the maintenance shop. We had two buildings that we stored our stretch wrap and our plastic bags in, and we almost lost our production building. We had Darren Smith, one of our employees. He literally, pallets were on the backside of the production building, got on a forklift, pushed them all out of the way to prevent that from helping to fuel the fire. The lights on the back of our production building melted off. It was that close. And when I got there, I'm telling the fire department, why aren't you putting this stuff out? Why aren't you putting this fire out? It's like, we don't have enough water. We have two fire trucks running into town, getting water, bringing it back, setting up, they set up, looked like a little yellow swimming pool. And they were two fire trucks were dumping water into the swimming pool while the other fire trucks were taking water, and all what they were trying to do was contain the fire. There's nothing they could do as far as dousing everything down. Hopefully they get this video going, but that black smoke, that's the bags. That's the stretch wrap. So I called my, after I was there, I called my attorney, told him what's going on, called my insurance company, and my attorney said, you need to contact a company out of Cleveland called Sill Company. And Sill Company is a company that represents you on behalf of you to communicate back and forth with the insurance company. And thank God I did, because my insurance agent said, well, if you hire a subcontractor like that to manage this thing, most likely the insurance company is going to drop you. And so I knew recently Dick Posey with Buckeye Resources had a fire within the same year or shortly before mine. And I called him and I asked him, since he had the same insurance company, what happened with him. And he said, Jim, your insurance company, no matter what, they're going to drop you. So if you want to hire someone to help protect your side, absolutely go ahead, and I would do that. And thank God I did, because my insurance agent said, okay, you're fully covered. You got a umbrella. You've got business interruption. Go ahead and just take a bulldozer and plow it all up. And Sill Company said, don't touch a single thing. Let us get there. They flew in. They got there the next morning. And they actually took inventory of every single item we had in our maintenance shop, every single that they could identify, transmissions, gearboxes, tools, and they were able to get us about an extra $500,000 just on items that we didn't even think about. Business interruption, they helped us with the whole thing. Grand total after business interruption and everything, it was about $4.2 million that our insurance company paid out. And what did we do going forward? We met with, there's the video, that's part of it. That's a pile of logs. I get there, it looks like I'm in the middle of a war zone. It looks like I just walked into like the Middle East somewhere. It was just absolutely devastating. So what did we do quickly? We was certainly the same thing with that Steve Liffer said. Some of our great competition reached out to some of our customers and said, Ohio Mall's burnt to the ground. We certainly can help you out. If you need help with any of your orders, we'll accommodate. We reached out to our customers and said, don't worry, we'll business as usual as quick as we possibly could. So we met with, at the time it was Columbus Equipment, now the principal's there is Maverick Equipment. They brought a horizontal grinder from Columbus, Ohio, trucked it the next day into Homerville, and we rented a portable grinder. We reached out to our bag manufacturers, and thank God some of them had had a heart. They switched over to production, made bags for us. Yeah, that's the building right there that did not burn, and they did everything they could to prevent it from not burning. Ordered some stretch wrap from Uline. You order online, Uline or whatever, and they'll ship the next day.
The scene about 6:20 a.m. on Wednesday, June 1st, 2011, Ohio Mulch. See the black cloud there with the fire here. It's really going up.
That was one of the firefighters that took that video. So going forward, we switched a lot of our equipment over to electric. And then we put in a Moberg system, and we built two cement sheds out of cement block with a steel roof. And we put all the hydraulics and everything inside that took that equipment off the horizontal grinder, put it inside a remote shed so it's sealed and protected from the dust that accumulates on your machine and the hydraulic fluid becoming an ignition source to catch your equipment on fire. We installed that grinder back in 2012, and we still have it today. Our maintenance shop, we did the same thing there. We made it steel and concrete and separated all of our buildings. So in the future, if something were to catch on fire, it's not going to take four buildings at once. We took our bag supply and we put it into an open shed, open roof, 300 feet away from everything else in the front parking lot. We took our sawmill, we built a new building, we moved it 200 feet away. We took our, we had always had a break room, so that was always separate for some reason. The office was always way up front. And then we put in a big pond on the property. And we took a truck, put a 1,000-gallon tank on it, and with a fire hose on it. The fire department donated to us a semi-trailer that holds 5,000 gallons of water. And we put a little gas engine on the back, and we're able to pull that around the yard and do preventive maintenance, pre-washing equipment when we're done with it. A lot of times it's not, the fires don't occur while you're at work. They occur 5-6 hours later when you're done. And sometimes we've had small fires where a piece of equipment catches on fire. It's the bearing on that grinder or on that screener that is encapsulated with bark dust. And next thing you know, a bearing goes out, heats up, creates a friction, catches that mulch on fire around that bearing, and before you know it, 5 hours, 6 hours later, that piece of equipment burned, you know, caught on fire, burned to the ground. You wonder why. Obviously, we switched insurance companies quickly. The faster you switch insurance companies, the less your experience shows up on your experience mod, so... that was certainly a benefit to us. We worked with the city of Homerville, Georgia, to get a grant to put a fire hydrant on our property. It took about a year, but they installed a fire hydrant right on our property, which if something like this ever happened again, at least they're not going all the way into town to get water to put out our fire. There's fire hydrant right on site. And we installed cameras, a better system. And just recently we updated. We have 27 cameras on site with heat detection, and we hired a company to monitor those cameras. It's not like they've got someone sitting in a room all day long just looking at the cameras and seeing if there's a fire. If there's a heat that senses in that footage, it just beeps and sends an alarm to the person who's monitoring all these companies. They pull up that monitor or that footage, that live stream, to see what's going on, and they can take action right away, as well as our plant manager has this on his cell phone as well. He can pull it up. That's it. Any questions? Harkin? Oh, the equipment that we lost? Our new rule is you have to park the equipment at least 20 feet apart. And as easy as that sounds, as difficult it is, and it gets to the point where you literally have to call the employee, have them come back to work to move that piece of equipment for them to understand, I don't want to do this again, so I'll make sure I park that equipment away from all the rest. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so our next catastrophic presenter is Kimberly Rogalski from the Scots, and they had a different event this year. They had a tornado, so she's going to tell you all about that. Here you go.
I'm going to use this if that's okay. All right. My story is very different. And I've got a couple slides. I want to make sure to share some learnings with all of you. So I'm going to talk a little bit about my story, because I think it's important to focus on the people. That's the most important thing. That's where I'm going to start. I will also share with you some keys to success. So what allowed us to get through this event and ultimately still be successful? I'm also going to talk about adapting and learning. Every time you have an event like this, whether it's something you can prevent or something you can't, you need to make sure you're learning from it and doing something different to be better the next time. And then I do have a couple of insurance recommendations. I will make a huge caveat. That is not my expertise. I did get some notes and comments from others within our organization. You may have questions related to it, and I will just say it is not what I know. I'm just sharing some of the nuggets that they gave me that they said I could share with all of you. So I'm going to start with my story. So I was actually traveling to Texas with leadership to another one of my facilities. I get a 911 text from one of my plant managers that's about a decade in the business. Holy shit. Never get a 911 text from this guy. What is going on, right? When I forgot to say, I'm on a plane. So I try to text him back. My phone's not working. Clearly his phone's like not working. And I'm like, what is going on? So then I try to figure out how to do wireless cell service to see if I can call him. I figured it out. Whew, I felt good about my technology skills that moment. Actually got through to him. And he's like, we have been hit by a tornado. My head is spinning. I actually have my leaders on the same plane with me, a row in front of me. I had a friend kind of catacorner to me, and she just saw my face go white, right? And I'm like, okay, are people okay? My first question, are people okay? And he's like, we're trying to get an ambulance here. He's talking very fast, and I'm trying to get as much information as possible. Cell service is lost. No idea if everybody's okay. Immediately, share with the people that I'm with, everybody starts texting, right? People on the ground, who can help us? Who can get there? Who can tell us what's happening, right? Because I couldn't do anything, right? My leader had sent me that 911 text, and I wanted to do whatever I could to help. A couple other points. Ultimately, I'll just share, everyone was safe. There was one individual who had minor injuries. There were 70 people at the facility when this occurred. It was over a shift change. There was 90 people probably. Never would you think, right, the worst time for an event to happen. Like, one, you wouldn't think a tornado is going to happen. Two, you're like, there's no way it's going to happen when you've got both shifts there, right? There's no way that's going to happen. Oh, it can, right? We learned we weren't 100% prepared for that full situation, except the leaders at that facility were prepared. They knew what to do. As we heard their story, they immediately got a text, need to take shelter. They got their whole team radioed out to everybody. They got everyone to where they were supposed to go to be safe within their shelter space. They are the reason that they saved people's lives that day. They acted fast. I'm going to go to the next page because these pictures are mostly for effect. First point there, emergency preparedness. You are never going to think that this is going to happen, but you need to practice this, even on an annual basis, right? What are you going to do if something happens? Who do you contact? How do you contact all the people in your plant? You need to make sure you know how to do that, right? Do you have radios? Are cell phones going to work when there's something going on? They're not. How else are you going to communicate? So the reason that this team was safe and successful to get through this catastrophic event was they were prepared. Every day, right? Annually talking about these things, how are you going to respond? Knowing where you need to go when there's an emergency. That is one of the most important things. Second thing is acting fast. You need to make sure you've got leaders that know what to do, right? They need to be able to make quick decisions that are going to save lives, regardless of what the event is. Next piece is you've got to pull a team together, right? Now I will say, Scotts Miracle-Gro, I've got a pretty good team of people I can pull together, whether it's safety, security, risk management, corporate engineering. I was able to pull all those resources together at a local level, at a corporate level, But you can do that at your plant as well, right? What are the expertise? Who are the people you need to pull together to actually talk about, once it's over, where do we go from here, right? The next piece is document. I heard some of my peers talk about that. Document, document, document. Pictures. You need to keep all of that for your records. Do not change anything until you documented everything that has happened. Communicate. That is another key piece. The fact that we were able to, I got that 911 text and I was able to communicate quickly with other peers, right? I could text our safety person saying, what is happening? Can you tell me what's happening? They were on the ground. They were able to text, call, etc. That is a very important thing in any of these situations. And then obviously once you kind of get through those pieces, what are you going to do about your business, right? But you can't necessarily be ready for this plan when it happens. That's something you got to think about even in that before you get there, right? What are you going to do if you have this type of event happening? Obviously, once the event occurs, then you need to think about, given the situation, how am I going to adjust and make sure I'm still servicing the customer? Am I able to still service the customer? And then the last piece to talk about is just debrief, right? So even once you get through it, what did we learn? How do we get better? Where do we go from here? So I've got a couple comments on that. So one thing we realized in this situation is, as I told you, it was during shift change. So there was two shifts there. I remember walking in the hallway, which was their storm shelter location, the next day after it occurred, and I was scared, and the tornado wasn't there. I'm walking through this hallway, and I'm like, you guys had 90 people in this hallway? With these windows, it was an inside windows, right? But with these windows shaking and rattling around, like, I was terrified and I wasn't there during the event. One thing we realized is we have locations that are going to have tornadoes. They're going to have major storms, and we didn't have adequate places for our employees to be safe. I'm going to go back to where I started, right? People. Most important thing. Are your people safe? This was something we realized. We don't need these types of things everywhere, right? That's a lot of money. You may have some high-risk locations where you may actually need something like this to put in place and have somewhere to go so that you are keeping your most important asset, your people, safe when those events occur. So we explored these. I will say we actually did purchase a couple of these for some of our high-risk locations. They have not been used yet, thankfully. And we have other options that we have at some of our facilities already of just a safe storm shelter for the team to go when there's an event. Because even when you've got a major storm, you still need to take shelter, right? And you've got to have a place for your team to be safe. All right, here's where I am less knowledgeable, but I'm still going to share some details of things that I heard from kind of our risk management team. And I think it connects to some of the things that we already talked about. Make sure you have a good broker, a good claim support advocate. It sounds like that was mentioned, you know, previously. And then just engage the adjusters through the entire process. This goes back to that communicate, 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 document, document, document. Ensure the value, I think I heard this mentioned too, right, is up to date. And things probably change on an annual basis, right? You've probably made improvements. Maybe something isn't there anymore. You need to be looking at that to make sure that you've got the right value associated with what you're being insured for. And then think about things you can do to basically mitigate loss prevention, right? How do you incorporate that into what you put into your plan? So whether that's a sprinkler system, safety things, right? What can you do to prevent catastrophic situations? And then if you've got the funds and if you've got the power, engage basically an insurance forensic accounting group who's going to help keep track of those things for you. Also back to that document, document, communicate, communicate. So that's my story. Hopefully you learned something from it. No one ever thinks they're going to have a tornado hit their plant. I surely did not. And it definitely made me stronger and definitely made me appreciate where I started, the people, because that's the most important thing. Thank you.
Thanks, Kimberly. We have a little time left here for some questions. Would anybody like to fire a question at one of these three? Right over here?
No, So as far as the value of the grass, if you talk about 11 million, does that include insurance on both piles also, or was that not insured?
Is this directed to Steve?
Yeah, it was, we had materials, we had, you know, obviously the buildings, the equipment, but yeah, it did include lost materials. Now, the lost material portion was quite low because one of the things with mulch fires is what looks like absolute hell is only burning about a half an inch. So from a lost product standpoint, that, you know, it was included in the what we approached the insurance company with, but it was certainly not you know, a multi-million dollar claim on that piece.
And as far as the equipment side was concerned, was it based on what the value would be currently or replacement value or somewhere?
So after we purchased the company, Swanson, myself and my business partner, there were a significant amount of items that required immediate attention. So it took us a while to direct our viewpoint towards things like valuations on equipment and whatnot. So certainly our fault, but no, they were not kept up to date. You know, as I think you mentioned, and we were, I don't like to point fingers, but we were sold a bill of goods on our by our broker from the standpoint that when they offered the co-insurance, nobody remembers them explaining what you're opening yourself to, other than the fact there was, you know, obviously a nice premium lowering from full insurance. So, and that's why I caution everybody in this room, it will be an attractive offer to look at co-insurance. Don't go near it. As you used a company, these guys, in my opinion, were bulldogs. You know, generally what's going to happen is insurance, no matter how friendly you are, no matter how many years you've done business with them, it is business. And they are going to try to pay the least amount possible out. So they actually, where we hadn't updated equipment values and proper buildings and things like that, they went back and said that it was certainly even less than what we thought, and where we were was way off. And then initially didn't take anything into consideration from a business interruption standpoint, because we were able to do what Jim did, is, you know, we circled the wagons. We still had one production line. We had 25,000-30,000 pallets up in prepack. So to the world, it looked like it was business as usual. But the cost of doing that business, you know, all of a sudden having to go to contract manufacturers, paying twice as much to get stretch film overnight, things like that, they didn't take that into account. So the majority of the money that we got back, the additional $4 plus million, I would say was split 50% between getting the values up on the equipment, and on the other half was the business interruption.
Even though the equipment value and insurance cost was one way, you were able to get a higher.
Yes. Yeah. And it's something that without, in our case, adjusters, we would have never, ever figured out the nuances of that game.
And then, Jim, anything to add to this comment?
Yeah. After we hired Sill Company, we did not communicate direct to the insurance company at all. We let them do it. And before we hired them, we told them we were going to hire them. It's like, oh, no, we're going to send you $250,000 today. And if you hire someone like that, it's going to slow down the process. And it may take a month or two before you get any money. And as soon as we told Sill that, they're like, that's bullshit. Don't even worry about it.
Thank you.
So, Jim, what kind of a dollar difference do you think that made?
I'd say at least a million and a half dollars.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
and their fees are, you know, all over the board, but for the most part, I think we paid 8 or 9% of what the insurance company paid out, and it was by far well worth it.
Okay. Yeah. So one of the big lessons here from Steve's standpoint is get your values right. So every year when you go over your policy, just go over the equipment list, make sure it's accurate. I know I just go on machinerytrader.com and you can bring up like equipment to what you have and get some general ideas of what it is, but it's time well spent. One thing I want to mention about ours is my wife had talked me into getting replacement value insurance. And we did that on our grinders just because they're more susceptible to fires and so on. Well, that's one of the machines that went up in our fire was our, we had a Peterson grinder that was a 2007 or 8 worth $400,000. They ended up writing a check out for almost $1 million to buy a brand new one. So that worked out pretty good, but they won't write replacement value insurance anymore, at least not with us. But if it's available, it's something to consider.
Yeah, our fire happened when there were significant wildfires going on in the Pacific Northwest. So not only did we get dropped by our insurance company, but we were unable to pick up any insurance company in the United States. So we ended up going with the Lloyd's of London. Double ouch.
Yeah. Any more questions?
We're struggling with our working comp insurance. We're in the category of organization. And I mentioned to Bob, if we could have somebody get involved with pursuing. I looked into it. Every insurance company I talked to so far said you're paying three times as much as you need to. And I wasn't really familiar with what it should be because we're only doing business in manufacturing. But I do find that there is a request form to add a new AAICS code, whatever it's called, to create category, change category, because right now we're under the PISO, under fertilization mix. Okay, now if somebody else has any other suggestions for that, that would happen. So far, everybody I've talked to in the last few years has been back to PISO.
I know we moved ours under forestry.
What state are you in?
Virginia.
Are you with the PEO?
No.
Well, I'm looking at a PEO.
No, that's what I was looking for. Because it's just it's a very much now our property insurance guy said you're in recycling. I'm under that property insurance. So, and when they came to look at it or whatever, they said, "What do you mean?" And it's like, "Oh, we take wood products and recycle." Okay, great.
Yeah, I think Florida had this about 7 or 8 years ago. They're classifying the mulch companies as a fertilizer, mulch and soil companies as fertilizer, and there was an action taken to get a new class code to get that changed, but I'd look into a PEO.
So a question for you is, do you have a different carrier for your work comp than you do the inland marine and your buildings and everything?
Yeah, because we've only been in the business 5 years, and we weren't. The first 3 years, you can't get insurance outside of accident funds. Now we do, and because we had significant increase in sales, that number has gone from something I wasn't worried about to something that really is an issue. Because, of course, you get audited the following year, and they don't realize that when your labor went up by double or triple, that when you're having, you get hit twice, right? You get hit for the last year, and then you want to adjust it going forward, even though you've already paid the premium.
Yeah, I think if you can get a company to take a look at everything, you can work that down.
Thank you so much.
Is that, well, we got one over here?
Yes, so we talked about any insurance that you use with fire. So what about the tornado? Do you have the same type of issues with the insurance company?
Same kind of issues of dollar variation? Like, which part are you asking about? So I'm going to say no, but it goes back to that document, and communicate, as well as engaging advocates to support you along the way.
So you didn't run into any act of God?
We did not, no.
Going once? Twice? Any more questions? Otherwise, we're going to wrap this thing up and go upstairs. So, thank you, everybody, for being here. Bob, did you want to say something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you all for sharing your expertise. You can't get that kind of experience anywhere else. So, and it's better to get their experience than live it real life. So, next is our president's reception. It's been moved for weather conditions. It's on the 15th floor. And we invite you to go up there anytime you want. It's the last event, so this is an opportunity for us to say thank you so much for your participation and your support. Thank you for coming to the 52nd MSC annual meeting. And we hope to see you next year in, oh, by the way, we do record all the sessions. We will put these will be available on the website for you to download both the audio files and the presentation decks. So there will be copies of everything available to those who were here. And it'll be fairly soon. For those who weren't here, they'll get a notice about it 3 months or 4 months from now. So, thank you so much. Safe trip home, and we look forward to seeing you upstairs. Okay, who's got my phone? Bonnie, can you call my phone? Oh, there it is. I see it. I got it. Out of sight. All right, this is yours?
Yep, and the doc.
The doc's yours?
Is mine.
Okay.
The sound thing is yours.
Have you got the dongle for the...
For this? I never connected that.
Oh, okay.
Not to my mouse. I never connected that to mine.
Okay.
Well, I don't think
this is my doc?
I think so. It should be.
Okay.
Connected to mine when I walked in here with it.
Okay.
And I didn't connect it.